You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher.
Rap Genius. So this is what makes hip hop so magnificent, because hip hop is another perception. It's another way to see the world, another way to look at things, another way to perceive. So if you can see the world through hip hop, you freed your mind.
Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, same old Sean. This episode, we have a talk with a man who truly needs no introduction, the legendary KRS-One. Our intrepid Polish correspondent, Andrzej Klimczyk, talked to the teacher about his work past and present. We get the inside scoop both on some of his most famous lyrics and on his philosophies and ideas. As always on Outside the Lines, we bring you a special kind of audio footnote. Every time you hear this sound,
Rap Genius,
go to rapgenius.com and search for OTL56. There, you'll find audio, video, and more information to bring you further outside the lines. You'll notice that the format of this show is a little different than most. It's divided into clips where he talks about one lyric at a time. This is because the original impetus to sit down with him was to get him verified on Rap Genius. But the answers he gave were so in-depth that they just wouldn't fit into a normal annotation format, so we bring you his full answers here. Right off the bat, we talk to him about one of his most quoted lyrics from Just Ice's Mosh It Up, where he says, "Suicide, it's a suicide."
This line, "Suicide, it's a suicide, with a bye-bye, suicide." This is an MC, this was a Jamaican patois lyric, very common in Jamaican just MCing, the style, suicide, it's a suicide. I'm telling the other MC or the opponent that you're basically killing yourself by coming to challenge KRS-One. I did this on the Just Ice album, I think it was Cool and Deadly. It somehow caught on, I guess. A lot of people liked the flow of it, so on. I heard it a few times in people's choruses. It's been scratched a few times in people's songs, and even said in people's lyrics. I love it all. I love it all. Anybody who knows me knows that you could use anything of KRS-One's. If you could somehow innovate what I did or just use what I did to better yourself, I'm all for it. There's a line I think it's My Philosophy, where I say, I don't eat chicken or beef, turkey or hamburger, because to me that's suicide, self-murder. Let us get back to what we call hip-hop and what it meant to DJ Scott LaRock. They could be referring to that. That's where I refer to suicide, eating meat. So it was in My Philosophy, actually. But no, when this record came out with Just Ice, Cool and Deadly, My Philosophy had already been out. Well, wait a minute. Let me think about that. Because they kind of came out around the same time. Whatever. You got me thinking about the past now.
Rap Genius.
Next, we address the beginning of his famous Boogie Down Productions song, South Bronx, and where the rather unusual style in the first verse came from.
You know, MC Shan is the beginning of my career. If it wasn't for MC Shan, KRS-One would not exist. I start that way all the time whenever talking about MC Shan. Whenever talking about MC Shan, I have to start off with, he is the creation and start of my career. And literally, because, you know, when you have lines, and I'm actually thinking of the full song. Many people tell me this style is terrific. It is kind of different. Let's get specific. Karis wants, you know, it was his style that I was doing. And many people don't know that. Many people do know that. But if you're from the era, if your hip hop begins in the 90s, say, for instance, you may think that the style that I'm doing on the South Bronx is actually my style. It's not. It's a parody of MC Shan's style. And I'm sort of mocking or mimicking his style. So in a lot of ways, you could say that KRS-One's first style was MC Shan's style. I kind of bit his style and started my style. That's something I would never say in public.
Rap genius.
Next, we talk to KRS about his song Hold, which he also produced.
Doom, 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 doom. Zoom, doom, doom, doom. That's Hold. Wow. You know, first of all, the production of that record is SB12, and I did that in my garage. I'm proud of that moment, I must say. Doom, 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 da-doom, doom, doom. Dun, dun, dun. I actually played that, made the SP-12 sort of sing, because the SP-12 is a rigid machine, the way it puts the beat back out. It's not like the MPC-60 or the Akai, where you could get a little more fluidity with the music. The SP-12 is doom. It's very tight. So to get the SP-12 to go dun 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 dun, that's just my own private level of perfection, and I just marvel at that. Your addictions to your needs and your wants is what causes problems in your life. That's what the whole record was about. Whole, that. The guy, I'm telling a story about a guy, how he puts himself deeper and deeper into a symbolic hole in life. When they say, you know, I'm in the hole, or, you know, you're not doing so well, you're trapped in your situation, you're in a hole. Of course, I use the poetry here to, only use the word hold, H-O-L-D, hold, W-H, O-L-E, and whole, H-O-L-E, to create a rhyme, to tell a story about this guy who was putting himself deeper and deeper into a trap, really, with his life. And what was putting him in that trap? His wants and his needs. Your addictions to your needs and your wants is what causes problems in your life. This is an interesting part, because this is also another form of enlightenment, to be able to separate your wants from your needs. And this is the funny part, because wants and needs are interchangeable. You want what you need, and you need what you want. Never think that your wants are less than your needs. Want is necessary. But of course, excessive want is greed. Excessive need is poverty. You don't want excessive. I need, you're so desperate. You don't need that. And to be so wanting that, you do desperate things to get what you want. You have everything you need, but it's still not enough. That's greed, in that sense. For me, I turn to the spiritual world. I don't know how many, you know, you guys, might interview a lot of artists, but I don't know how many of them are really content. And I'm not saying this again to be critical. This is just another lesson in wants and needs. That KRS-One, the one thing I can say about KRS-One is that he is content. He is happy in this chair right here, right now, right here. I am in absolute paradise right here, and let's record it. This is absolute paradise. And I'm not saying that because I'm just sitting here. I am literally content with my being, with who I am, with why I am, what I mean, and what I mean to myself. This lessens my wants and my needs dramatically, dramatically. There used to be an argument that said, all these clothes we wearing, Nikes, Pumas, Adidas, jeans, shoes, it's the Chinese that's making all this stuff for pennies. It's the Taiwan, it's Korea. They're making this stuff for pennies in sweatshops. I gained enlightenment. The Chinese taught one of the most brutal lessons. One of the most brutal economic lessons was just taught by the Chinese, and no one seems to be paying much attention. Here's the lesson, and it goes back to wants and needs. What I learned is that it is better to live on 50 cents a day than $50 a day. In America, more than half the population can't exist without at least getting a $50 a day, getting $50 a day, at least. Some do it on $20, bless their soul. But the most American families, at the least, every single day, they got to come up with $50 to $100 to eat, gas in the car, handle little things that may come up, kids, this, that, and the other. They at least got to come up with $50. In other parts of the world, same family, same needs, food, clothes, shelter, safety, like that. Same needs. They do it on a dollar a day. Now look at the math. A family in poverty in the United States is in poverty because they can't come up with $50 a day or $20 a day. You can't function. You can't drive your car. You can't go eat. You can't do anything on $20 a day in the United States. And I'm just keeping it real. Of course, economists will tell you, yes, you could live for, America only costs $3.35 for you to live. And I don't know where that person's living. On a day-to-day basis, if you live in the United States, and on a day-to-day basis, if you live in the United States, and you come up with, you have to come up with $50 a day if you have children, just a robust family, at least, and people are looking at me now laughing, going like, $50 a day? I smoke $50 a day. I need $300 a day. I need $1,500 a week to really run my life, or I can't function. This is average America. Now you go to some other country. They say, listen, I only need $10 for the week. And I fed my kids. I had somewhere nice to live. I'm living amongst my peers. We're all living together because that's what luxury is, you know. Luxury is only based on your neighbor. If your neighbor got a shack and you got a shack, y'all both in luxury. Now, when the person comes and builds a house on your block, now you're in poverty. Why? Because you're compared to this person's brick house now. So if you're living, if everybody's living the same way, then there are little luxuries based on your little ways of living. You live for $10 a week. An American can't live for $10 an hour. The Americans can't live. They got to make $10 or they can't do anything in the country. So you look at how China, now I'm not saying China's some great place to live. And I'm not saying America is the worst place to live. Not at all. But look at the economic lesson that China has taught the world. If you can bring your expenses down, if you can live every day off $10, if somehow in the United States even, if you can somehow live, and maybe not your whole life, just say give it, try to start it on a weekly basis. You say, this week coming up, I'm only going to live on $10. I'm only going to do what $10 can offer. I'm only going to live within $10. Suddenly, if you can just live that week off, you eat everything, you walk to where you got to go, you do, but you don't spend no more than $10 for that day. Your economy, immediately you become wealthy because if somebody comes now with $100 for the day, you can already, you've met all your needs with $10. So if somebody comes with $100, that $90, you're wealthy. You're extremely wealthy because it only costs you $10 to live. It only costs you a dollar to live. And if you match this up with nature, this is how nature does it as well. Nature takes the least amount and does the most with it. It's not take the most amount and do the least with it. That don't even add up in nature. What adds up in the universe and in nature is that the bigger you are, the less energy you should use. So the less energy you use. And the smaller you are, the more energy you do. Great things with little bits of energy and little bits of resources. This is how hip hop started. Why do I gotta go to the universe? Go right here to hip hop, right here. It was poverty, and not poverty meaning we didn't have money. Hip hop always had money. We always had some money, but the poverty was in our comparison to the mainstream. We were good amongst ourselves. We were chilling. But the minute you say, well, I could sign to Mercury Records. I could sign with Columbia. I could sign. So now the guy who used to rap on the corner, and we all was rapping on the corner, and he had a status, and he enjoyed a certain status, and that gave him a luxury, and we was comparing ourselves to him. Now an outside force comes in with bigger resources, worldwide distribution, money like you can't believe. Now all these MCs become poor. And that's the first analogy to make. And then the second one, also going back to that lyric, needs and wants, is I am content with my life, with how I live, with the way in which I live. Everything I wrote about in the gospel of hip hop, in Ruminations, it all came true. Those who have the books, and know where can refer to what I'm talking about, what was written in the books, it all came true. I'm living proof that the mind does work. That environment and perception is really two aspects of the same thing. And this is what it is. But first, you have to make sure that your wants, that all you want is your needs. And this becomes the balance. That all you want are your needs fulfilled. Once my needs are fulfilled, I don't want anything else. That becomes greed. But most people, they can't live like this because there's such a thing called pleasure, stimulation, even vision makes you desire more than what you require to live. Me, myself, at this particular age, I have all the awards that rap music offers. I have the respect of my peers. I'm still touring. I just put out a new project called Never Forget. And I'm still at the top of my class in what I do. And I'm content in that. I'm content in hip hop. So my want is fulfilled in hip hop. My need is fulfilled in hip hop.
Next, we dealt with his song, Reality. In particular, the line, "Everyone and everything is at war," making my poetic expression hardcore.
Well, consider all of those people that you say are fighting for more and grabbing and ambitious and so on. Consider them the sea, like water. And consider me a boat. I sit on top of the confusion, and I'm rocked by the confusion, by the greed. I'm not in it. I'm rocked by it. I'm a well-built boat. I'm built for the tropical storm to come. I will never sink. I'm on top like this, getting moved around. Now, sometimes I have to adjust my oars. Sometimes I have to adjust my navigation, but I'm made for the sea. I'm made to sail on top of the ignorance that people come up with, and not even ignorance, the immaturity, the blindness, the not being able to see the truth. And I say that humbly because in a lot of ways, I think that those who can see the truth were chosen to. When you really look at the nature of nature, the character of nature, I could see how the ancients regarded nature in human characteristics, or even animals. So even going further back, nature acted like certain animals that they saw. But later on, we get nature in human personification. And I could see that I talk to the universe and it talks back to me as well. I know that's hard for some people to understand, but there's a certain way, there's a certain awareness you achieve in life where you can see behind everything. You kind of know what's causing everything, and it's playful. It plays with you. It's like nature is very joyous and having fun all the time. Like, it doesn't care about death. It doesn't care about life. It doesn't care about how little or big or whatever. Its character is like, let's go. Well, come on. Well, let's do it. Well, let's try. That's like the character of nature. And when you can see that, you submit to nature. There's a submission where you go, wow. So there is an intelligence to all of this. Turn on the radio and a message comes right there when you hit the right. When you turn on the radio, the message is right there. Or, you know, you're driving down the street and the billboard is talking to you. People have these experiences all the time where you get, you intend a question. I wonder if, you know, I wonder what's going on with Johnny today. And you run into him, bam. And it's like the universe is talking to you. Nature is responding to you and laughing at every time it matches you. It joys. It goes like that. So imagine the universe is a mirror. It's a mirror. And whatever you do in front of it, it does in front of you. It mimics you to the T. So it's like, this also explains like what people say, karma will go around, come around. It's not that you did something, it goes out and somehow comes around. It's like when you do something, you've instantly done it to the universe. Me doing this right now, the universe is mirroring this activity right now. It's mirroring it where it is. It wants to do what I do and I want to do what it does. And we're doing it together because we're really one thing anyway. And so when you know that, not only do you submit and you just say, well, then have your way. Just go do it because you're not smarter than the universe. You're not smarter than that. You may have your little mathematics or your little, but this intelligence is way beyond numbers and letters and distance, measurement, time, space. The universe is laughing at these physicists playing. I'll show you how the universe is playing with physicists right now, just to show you the magnificence of the universe. The universe is giving the physicists answers, but in riddles. In riddles. The physicists are, the universe gave them mathematics, okay? Universe says, look at this childhood game, mathematics. Now, all of physics is based on math. It's based on calculation, the study of patterns. This is all of mathematics. This is what math does and is. But the physicist will never ask, the mathematician will never ask, what is mathematics mapping? Mathematics is not the pattern itself. Mathematics is mapping the pattern of something. Math is not the thing itself. Math is the symbols we use to detect the thing. What is the thing is what we want to know. Letters are not words. Word is what is coming out of my mouth right now. This is word. This is what word is. Now to capture this invisible force called word, we make letters. Letters are not words. Letters are the symbols we use to detect words, to capture words. Same thing with math. Math is not the thing it's looking at. Math is looking at certain forces in the universe and trying to map them. The trick is you're never going to know nature until you become nature. Nature does not reveal secrets through intelligence. And quantum physics just figured this out, that every time you look at an atom, it's in one fixed position. When you turn your head or don't look at the atom, it's everywhere. It's in superposition. That atoms exist in a dimension of chaos, of pure chaos. The intellect can't even deal with the logic of the atomic world, can't even deal with it. Now here's the mirror effect right here. Quantum mechanics tells us that the observer and the thing observed are the same thing. That I am making this camera a camera because this is what I am doing with light in my own mind. In my own mind, we all agree that this is a camera and we all looking at it and it's camera. But technically, we are all not seeing the same thing. I'm seeing the camera the only way I am seeing it. You're seeing the camera the only way you are seeing it, and so on and so on and so on. Everybody's looking at the camera only according to their perception of this camera. Woo! I say all of this to say, and I'm you're making me lose my point because I know I have to go in this. But what I will say, I'll cut it off and say this. With the quantum mechanics point, the observer is making up the world that the observer is seeing. How cruel is nature? Everything we are creating, whatever we see is not going on out here. It's going on in here. We know this with color. We know this with sound. We know this with everything. We're not even experiencing reality. We're only experiencing our own perceptions. And the one that controls perception is the one that controls reality. So this is what makes hip hop so magnificent, because hip hop is another perception. It's another way to see the world, another way to look at things, another way to perceive. So if you can see the world through hip hop, you freed your mind.
Next, we talk about the song Trust, in particular the lines, "So when will you be it, when will you see it, that thoughts and things, they manifest when you decree it, but God be looking out for you."
That enlightenment there came when I was on the streets. Wow, that's a whole nother book. That's just a, well, as a matter of fact, you know what? Let me just give you the book then. Here's a little bit of the book. I left home when I was about 14, 15 years old to become an MC. From about age one, from as far back as I can remember, I was always studying philosophy, religion, mysticism, occult sciences, things like numerology, astrology, creative visualization, that coupled with history, and so on. So by the time I got to 13, 14, I was well-versed in the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of the Buddha. By the time I was 15. And so, but when I was 15, it was no big deal for me. It was just the way I grew up. I wouldn't know till later that no one else knew this, or very few people knew or was even interested in what I was studying. But at the time, I left home to become an MC and to pursue this type of thinking. When will you be it? When will you see it? Thoughts of things, they manifest when you decree it. That's Thoughts Are Things. It's actually a book called Thoughts Are Things. That's Ernest Holmes, Science of Mind. That's Dianetics. That's Scientology. That's the Kabbalah. That's the whole idea that the mind is affecting matter, that matter and mind is two aspects of consciousness. It's just consciousness that manifests either as mind or as matter. And I left home on that. I left home on that thought, saying that my mind is going to manifest my entire career. That was when I knew it. But then when you put out the South Bronx and then Criminal Minded and then so on, you begin to really feel what that means. You begin to really say, wow, you know what? This is true. My mind creates my environment, creates my reality. And so I started, I guess I at that point, I put it in a rhyme. I was inspired to put it in a rhyme and say it out like that. Hopefully people got the message.
And finally, the teacher looks back to Y2K for his song Tears. The line here is, "Better change your ways, we coming up on some stranger days."
That lyric was written, that lyric was written in 1999. It wouldn't come out till after 9/11 in the 9/11 event in the United States. September 11th, 2001. I did an album called Spiritual Minded that came out probably a year later, 2002. And it was reflecting back on those times. People don't really remember because America's memory span is very short. But people don't really remember how desperate they were coming up on 2000, the year 2000. Things weren't going to work. There was all kinds of alien stories and movies were done and all of this type of stuff. And then sure enough, when 9/11 happened, no one would ever dream that that would be the change. We were waiting for aliens, and some even believe, well, whatever. But at the end of the day, we were waiting for a more dramatic end of 2000. Well, we couldn't get more dramatic than September 11th. And of course, when dramatic events happen in history, it is the poet's job or work to document the moment, but not from his or her own feelings. Yes, there's a place for that as well. But to try to capture the moment of the people, try to capture the collective consciousness of what people are feeling at that moment and write it down as if you become the people and start writing down from a solo voice what everybody else is feeling. At least this is how I write or document history. Others, I see others doing it as well. So this particular rhyme comes out as a sort of to inspire the listener that we know things are going to change. Don't be shocked at these rapid changes. This is what happens. This is actually how opportunities are created. Rapid change. So when I put out Spiritual Minded, which was actually a gospel album, a secular gospel album, that lyric was appropriate for that particular album. I was talking about more like what was about to happen, the changes. Of course, you know, when you're writing in that mind state, it's not intellectual. It's very spiritual, where you can't explain in words and numbers how you know what you know. You just feel it, and you don't even get a clear picture. But when the thing happens, you say, ah, that's what that meant. That's what that was. And from 2001 to 2013, the world has changed, not just the United States, but drastically changed. The world has changed. We tend to just look at technology. Technology is speeding the world up in terms of its ability to change. But there's been over 20 rebellions in all these countries. Governments have been overthrown since 2001. Since 2001 to 20, just 13 years, just that quick period, Libya gone. The heads of Egypt gone, or at least in some sort of turmoil. Tunisia. I can go on and on. And these are the ones we know about that's on TV with big fanfare. What about these little governments that are just disappearing? And what we talked about, the New World Order and the globalization and this, that, well, it's happening right now. And a lot of the changes that we referred to then are happening through globalization. And I'm not critical. I'm not even being critical here as well. Globalization has its downs, but it also has its ups. And I'm not cheering for it or criticizing it. This is just about reality. This is just about looking at the temperature of your environment and preparing for it, not against it. You don't prepare against the rain. You prepare for it. You put a jacket on. You get an umbrella. You don't complain and protest. It's going to rain. Let's get out and protest. It's going to rain. Stop the rain. No, this is a, there are seasons and changes to life itself. And if you could look and see, some may call it globalization. Some might call it New World Order. Some may call it one world government. Some may call it revolution. Either way, what are you doing? And that's in my songs. What are you doing? What are we all doing to prepare ourselves for the temperature and the environment of other people's minds? Because that's all we're really subjected to is other people's minds. They're living their lives, expressing their minds, using the resources that they can muster up to survive themselves. Others of us are doing the same thing, but we somehow get it in our mind that there's this entity that wants us to be enslaved. And what I've learned studying slavery now, veering off the road a little bit here, is that the first one that enslaves you is yourself. The first one. Like, even if somebody walked in this room right now and put shackles on all of us, shake, shake, say, we're selling you. We're like, oh, this is crazy. The guy that's in shackles, gunpoint to the head. They're like, yo, we're like this. Even if you're shackled and they're telling you you're going into slavery, you yourself still have to accept it. You still have to say, yes, I am going into slavery. Even being shackled, you could be screaming, kicking, fighting all the way down. That scream, kick, and fight means you're not a slave. You're a human being shackled, and this person is calling you that. Now, there's another person who gets shackled. They don't even get shackled. This other person picks up the handcuffs, put them on themselves, and say, Master, is this how you want me? Is this how you want me to be shackled? I'll shackle myself to you, Master, because I want to live in your house. Now, that's sadly 99.9% of people out here today fighting for a job as opposed to knowing their purpose in life and doing their work. I always say, when you lose your job, you find your work. They say 11 million people, 20 million people are out of work. Thank God, they're free. What you need to do now is finish that album, finish that sculpture, go clean your attic out, finish that book, all the things you couldn't do because you were working and giving your time and energy to some corporation. Now you have the chance to express your soul. And I'm off onto something else, but that lyric means all of that. Yeah.
That was our chat with KRS-One. If you liked what you heard on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, be sure to go to iTunes and subscribe so that you never miss an episode. While you're there, make sure to leave us a review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the better chance we have of continuing to get amazing guests like KRS-One. Also, make sure to visit our new website, OutsideTheLinesPodcast.com, and to follow us on Twitter at OTL_podcast. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is created and written by Sean Sitaro, a.k.a. Same Old Sean.
You know, you're not doing so well. You're trapped in your situation. You're in a hole.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Some may call it revolution. Either way, what are you doing?
This interview was conducted by Andre Klimchik.
Let's go. Well, come on. Well, let's do it. Well, let's try.
Special research assistance and internet help from Julia Hannafin.
That's something I would never say in public.
Our music is by Psionic.
The study of patterns. This is all of mathematics. This is what math does and is.
And the creator of the brand new OutsideTheLinesPodcast.com is Paul Dice.
I left home on that thought.
Make sure to join us in 2 weeks when our guest will be West Coast rap industry legend Paul Stewart, the man responsible for the careers of everyone from Tone Loc to The Far Side. We'll see you then, Outside the Lines.
That's great.